Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Pull Up Podcast, brought to you by HoopsCritic.com.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Pull Up Podcast. I am Jacob Noble, the host for the Tuesday and or sometimes Thursday show. Tonight happens to be Thursday, and we are here with none other than Steve McPherson. How are we doing today, Steve?
I'm doing great.
We have a lot to talk about, surprisingly. Some news dropped today. I actually enjoyed your tweet about it, but we'll get to that in a minute. This story that I feel like we should start off with a little seriousness, and then we'll get to a little bit wacky as we go along. You know, keep the old school hoop heads interested for a little bit till we get off the rails here. But the more I read about this story, and it's coming fast, especially with the season approaching, USA camp's going underway, going to have camp soon in a few weeks. The Morris situation, and I say Morris because it's technically both of them. It all started with Marcus Morris, as we like to call it, the lesser of the two brothers, getting shipped off in a trade, and I guess the news story came out today that they took friendly deals to allow each other to play together to, you know, help the Suns out. They were under the impression that they wouldn't trade him away, and now all mayhem has broken loose, and to the point where he's only texting Jeff Hornacek one-word answers. Steven, what do you make of all this, and what is the end result here?
You know, it's really tough to say. I mean, I haven't seen the Suns a couple times they came, at least I saw them at least one of the times they came to the Target Center last year against the Timberwolves. It was weird to see a team that had been such a feel-good story the year before look like they just didn't really like each other that much. And it just seemed like a vibe on the team. And part of it was the Morris twins, who seem like sort of they have like a bad attitude, which doesn't, you know, I mean, there's plenty of players who have, you know, less than sterling attitudes. But even at that point, I thought it seemed kind of strange. And then so hearing this come out about Markieff, you know, demanding a trade basically from the Suns because of not even that they traded his brother, but because of the way that he was told about it or something. It just sort of seems like I think Tom Ziller had a good post on it where he essentially said that, you know, you took a sweetheart deal to do this thing, but this is a business. If the team decides that it has to move on from it, then it has to move on from it. They're not going to hang on. You know, the whole team isn't going to be beholden to, you know, the feeling that these guys should play together from them if they feel like the best thing to do is to keep going. I mean, given that, I don't really – I mean, I think Markieff Morris does hold some sway in the situation in the fact that he could really – as an important player on that team – he could really mess it up if he's not, on board with what the Suns are doing. So I could see them trying to trade him. I mean, it's a very affordable deal. You know, that's part of the problem is that he made this deal where he's probably not getting paid what he's worth. So there's probably teams that want to get him. So I feel like it's going to end up with Markieff not being on that team.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And there's no situation I can see Markieff going back to the Suns, especially at this point. You know, Tom Zell is absolutely right. It is a business. And how often do we hear players say that? And it's funny, you know, and this always comes up with the CBA talks is, you know, how much of it's a business, but yet, you know, we'll get to those CBA talks later down the road, but we always hear those comments. The players always say it, they understand it. So it's pretty shocking that Markieff doesn't understand it at this moment in his, you know, career. And there's no win for the Suns. You know, if he decides to sit out and not show up, obviously they can find him, but they really want his talent on the court. They're building a team over there. But from a purely basketball standpoint, Steve, you know, the two teams that are being rumored where he wants to go is Houston or Toronto. Which team would he fit in better for himself, and, you know, which team would benefit more by gaining him if they were able to make a trade?
That's a good question. I think personally I'd like to see him on Toronto. I think that,
I agree.
You know, Toronto's obviously done a lot of work in the off season after, you know, sort of disastrous playoff run. And a lot of that has been geared toward sort of getting a little tougher, I would say, maybe a little meaner. And I think Markieff Morris kind of fits into that, obviously. Again, it's like, you know, he sort of has a tough, mean attitude on the court, and that can be bad if the situation is not good, but I think Toronto is very promising as well. And I think that he could be good on Toronto. I mean, Houston is just, I mean, they're really good, obviously. I think they have a vision of what they're going to do, and they did do some good work last season adjusting, you know, midway through by picking up Josh Smith, which I was convinced was, I was like, this isn't a good idea to bring in a guy midstream. But, he ended up fitting in pretty well there. So, I mean, I think he's going to be a good player in the NBA and productive wherever he is. I think I'd rather see him on Toronto.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he kind of, you know, will fill that Amir Johnson void, a nice little niche of a role, but obviously produce that better statistics and, you know, younger, fresher, and all that good stuff. So I'd like to see him in Toronto. I think it's just going to end badly. I hope for the league standpoint, this isn't a sit-out, no-show type situation, you know, where it gets really messy, where the Suns basically have to give him away just to get a, you know, get out of the headache and move forward. But
yeah,
that remains to be seen. Let's brighten our day up here. A little fun topic before we get too crazy. Greg Oden has signed a contract to play in China. And, you know, I'm most likely going to pronounce this wrong. And, you know, God bless you if you get this yourself over there. Jianzhou Dragons? I don't know if I said that right. But my question to you is, and I'm noticing that I'm learning more about foreign basketball leagues and teams just because you have players leaving the NBA going there to get some money to, you know, continue their career. But we're also getting a lot of foreign players coming here for a few years, showing us some signs of life, and, you know, going back for whatever reason. You know, the newest was Zoran Dragic heading overseas to play in Russia. Do you, like, how do you envision the growth of American interest in foreign basketball? You know, is there a potential there for that? So, you know, we'll be watching, you know, these foreign leagues in the offseason. I know, you know, a lot of us do anyways, but, you know, the average basketball fan that's a fan of, you know, the Timberwolves.
Right. Yeah, I think it's tough because it's very hard to overcome that sense that which I think is justified largely, which is that the NBA is the best basketball product you're going to find, which doesn't mean that, you know, there isn't an appeal to foreign leagues, or especially I think European leagues are maybe the next ones that might actually get some attention from NBA fans. But there is just this bias that makes you feel like, you know, the NBA is where it's at and this is what we want to watch. I think it's going to be a little bit hard to cultivate a fan base for, you know, like EuroLeague teams or anything like that, even with teams that are, you know, fairly successful and fun to watch, like FC Barcelona or other, you know, teams like that. I think one thing, it's weird because in one sense, the availability of being able to watch this stuff, you know, online or, you know, see it on YouTube or see clips and things like that means that you can get more attention to it. But also the amount of work that people are doing by taking apart players' games and showing them to you in pieces means you don't even really have to get invested in the game. I mean, you know, I think about when I'm looking at draft stuff, I just go to Draft Express and I'm looking at Euro guys and I'm seeing all their stuff like cut together. I can go see Bielitsa, who's, you know, coming to the Timberwolves this season. I can go there and see a whole bunch of his stuff set, you know, clipped together. And then I'm just looking at him as a player, not really understanding the context of what he's doing. And so to get that context, you have to learn so much about the systems and the way the game is played and everything like that. I mean, it'll be fun to follow some guys who go over to foreign teams. I mean, Robbie Hummel, who's played for the Wolves for a couple of years, is now going abroad, which is where I actually started his career. And, you know, I'll be trying to sort of follow along with him and see how he does, because I think he's a really solid player. He's been like a do-it-all guy in the NBA, not do anything terrifically, but he played over his 2 years in the Wolves, he played every position except point guard at one point or another. Like if you go look at his stats, like he played shooting guard, small forward, power forward, and center. And he would do all of it with a smile on his face and show up and play hard. So I think it'll be fun to try to track him a little bit, you know, when he goes overseas. But I do think there is still that hurdle of people just inherently feeling that the NBA is what we should be paying attention to.
Right, it's been around the longest out of all those important leagues, high-quality leagues. But the news dropped yesterday, I believe, that the schedule came out, and everyone gets excited. So one of my favorite times of the year, not in terms of I don't really care what's on the schedule, but it's just that first, you know, wave of here's the new season, here's our schedule. And it's, to me, I think it's, you know, team bloggers Christmas. They get that schedule, and they just run through it, pick their favorite games, pick, you know, the key games for fans, such as, you know, X players returning, or the Champs are coming to town this week. It's a very exciting time. And I think every team has put up their crucial games on their block, so it's pretty fun to just bounce around. My question for you, Steve, first I guess we'll talk about the good stuff of the schedule, and that is they have shortened the 4 games to 5 nights from 70 games last year, or 70 situations, I guess, to 27 this year. So that's looking to maybe prevent some injuries. I'm curious to see what those stats are. And then also, you know, reducing the back-to-backs, which I don't know if you saw Andre Drummond's tweet. He wasn't happy about 0 national television games, yet 20 back-to-backs. And
sure.
My question to you is that, do you agree with him?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, obviously distributing the, like, the national TV attention is always contentious. And the way that, you know, everybody keeps saying, okay, listen, the Lakers are bad right now, but they still keep getting national TV. Part of that is just Kobe, but part of that is also the Lakers. They just have a huge fan base.
Right, could be a farewell.
Right, exactly. I mean, people are going to want to see that. I mean, I think that the back-to-back, you know, trying to cut down on those is huge. Trying to cut back on the 4 games and 5 nights is really big. I was just looking at something, somebody tweeted it, who was saying that they've cut down on you know, those 4 games and 5 nights, but you've actually also reduced the long layoffs. Like, there are fewer, like, 3-day layoffs for teams right now. Which is interesting, and I wonder how much that might also have to that
All
actually
right.
might benefit in some ways. Like, fewer longer layoffs might help health because they're, you know, they're not doing. Sometimes I know from experience that coaches hit a thing where they're not getting practices during the season, and that's difficult. But then the thing is, as soon as they have a longer layoff, they want to give their guys some time off. You know, they don't. That's not the moment when you want to start hitting the gym hard with the practices. So maybe just having fewer of those will lead to lesser of those days, and players aren't. I mean, you know, it might even out the tempo of the season a little bit. So,
right.
I guess it just remains to be seen. It's very difficult to tell. You know, it's so many teams and so many moving parts and so much travel. You know, like, I thought one of the interesting things is that they have the Warriors traveling the most and the Cavaliers traveling the least, and those are the two teams that, you know, were in the finals. So that's sort of an interesting. I think, you know, I'm sure some Warriors fans are going to see some conspiracy there, but I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, you know, and so let me ask you, because every year there's a few teams that just do not get a national televised game, and out of this list, the 3 teams this year, I should say, the Sixers, rightfully so, don't deserve a spot, but I think, you know, you should throw one to every team, kind of like the MLB All-Star situation where you try to get a representative of every team. You know, you're really trying to expose the brand as a whole. And, you know, if I'm an owner, I'm probably a little peeved, although, you know, my money is still coming in the same because the TV deal split. But, you know, I'd like, come on, throw us a game or two here and there, you know, put it up against the Lakers or something. What's your take on that? Do you think that every team should at least have one national televised game?
I mean, I think it would be great to be able to do that. I mean, I think that the other thing about the national games that's a little bit weird is that, you know, they count like an NBA TV game as a national game, which honestly, as somebody who I don't have cable. I mean, I watch a lot of my games in person when I'm going to the Wolves. When I'm not, I'm watching them at home, and I don't get NBA TV. So that's like the one thing I can't watch. Like, I can, you know, I can figure out ways to get to TNT and
I don't have it either.
TBS and, like, yeah, so it's like I can always, you know, get TNT through, you know, like either, you know, various cable workarounds and things like that, and, you know, stream. I have ESPN on my Apple TV and stuff like that, but I just cannot get an NBA TV game. So to me, it's like, you know, you could throw them on. If you could get everybody on NBA TV once, it's like maybe that makes them feel better, but it certainly doesn't mean that I think a lot more people are going to see it necessarily.
Right, right. Now, let's get some good news about the season, because we're all about good news. You know, I kind of started this podcast on a little bit of a downer story there with the Morris brothers. But let's bring this up, because there is a celebration going on in Milwaukee for 2 reasons, but I know a lot of people are iffy on the second reason. But everyone agrees on the first, and that is the Bucks will be starting at home for the first time since 1984-85 season. I think that just shows you the leaps and bounds that franchise has taken in the 25 years that it's taken to get to this.
That is pretty, I did not know that. And that's crazy that it's been that long.
Right? just throwing the bus on the road every time to start the season. You know, they like to wake up in their bed to start the season, to get off on the right foot, which is going to help a very young team. So that I just want to congratulate the Bucks for, you know, winning that lottery, I guess.
Absolutely.
But the next part of the topic is a little political, and I'm not going to lie, I haven't followed this story too much because I don't live in the area. You know, financially, doesn't really affect me. And it's just one of those deals that I feel like happens so often all around the country that I just don't, it's not a news shocker to me, but it is an NBA related financial story. And that is, you know, with the Bucks getting some funding approved by the government, they found out was cut from Wisconsin colleges, or, you know, someone did the math where he cut one program for X amount of dollars and equal the same amount that they're throwing to the new basketball arena, which we all know the new arena keeps the Bucks in town, which I'm for not having teams move around anymore. It gets confusing. So how do you feel about a story like that? You know, on one hand, it's, you know, taken from local colleges and, you know, that infrastructure of education. But at the same time, as a selfish fan, keeps the Bucks in town.
It's a really tough issue. I think that John Oliver, actually on his show a couple of weeks back, did a big thing about stadium funding and you know, the way that teams will threaten to and the way that teams will threaten to leave, which the Bucks basically were doing if they don't get a new stadium. Which I've been to the Bradley Center, and that I think I was there maybe 10 years ago, and it definitely needed some renovations, and that was quite a while ago. So they certainly need a new facility if they're going to play there. But there is sort of an uncomfortable element to the way it gets done and this whole thing of looking at, you know, the budget allocations and whether this actually does anything for, you know, for the community in some way. Like there aren't really any studies that show that economic development is spearheaded by new arenas and places. I think that the Bucks were specifically referred to in that John Oliver piece where, you know, the mayor of Milwaukee was talking about being in China and somebody looking at his shirt that was a Bucks shirt and saying, you know, hey, Milwaukee Bucks. And he's like, that's important. And John Oliver was like, is it? Like, is that really? I mean, because somebody in China recognizing you, I think John Oliver said it had to be Yi Jianlan, who played for the Bucks, must be the only guy who would recognize the Bucks in China, which is pretty funny. But, it's a touchy issue, and there's a lot of moving parts to it. And you're right, it comes down to emotions in a lot of ways for fans. I mean, I have family who live in Milwaukee. I have a cousin who I know has been a big Bucks fan for a long time. And even I, as a Timberwolves, as somebody who follows the Timberwolves and for a long time, you know, when people would talk about, like, contraction and we got to get rid of some of these teams in the NBA, I'm like, yeah. And they're like the Timberwolves. And I'd be like, no, don't get rid of the Timberwolves. You know? So it is a very touchy issue that has so many moving pieces that go in a lot of directions that are emotional and political and financial. And it's very hard to figure out where to draw all those lines, because any place you draw lines about who gets funding for this kind of stuff, you're cutting somebody out of it and you're hurting somebody. I'm glad that the Wolves aren't dealing with it, I guess, is what I would have to say about that.
Right. And it's, you know, the team I follow happens to, you know, rent their stadium, so we don't have to worry about that. And it's such a heavily sports city that I think this taxpayer group here would probably dump all their pockets out for any of these teams. But on the flip side, let me ask you a random question. So it's on the subjects of moving teams and such. I think it's criminal that Seattle doesn't have a team. I think it's, you know, such a big market. It's, you know, obviously we know what happened there. But if there was one team, and you can pick none, if there was one team you would move from where they currently are to Seattle, is there a team and who is it?
Oh, man. I'm going to get in trouble for any team that I think I would pick to go to Seattle. Although I agree with you that I think Seattle – yeah, I'm already seeing all the people I'm going to piss off no matter what I say. So, I love Seattle, and I think Seattle should definitely have a team.
Why are you for expansion?
Well, I don't know. I could pick the Lakers because they're not doing so well. Just get out of that big money deal right now and move them on over there. I guess, you know, like a couple years ago, I might have thought, like, you know, the Bobcats or something. But right now with their rebranding as the Hornets, I think that that's really fun. And I think that's really good for Charlotte. Let's just add some more teams.
It brought back memories of Kendall Gill for me, so I'm all for it as well.
Totally.
But let me jump back to the schedule question because the question I forgot to ask, I'm rambling, which happens all the time, is
sure.
So everyone picks their games. I want to know what games you were looking forward to next year. I'll tell you one of mine that I cannot wait to see just because I just love this guy's attitude, only when he cares. And I'm looking forward to the first time that Rajon Rondo ends up in Dallas to play the Mavericks.
Yeah,
revenge games, you know, obviously the Morris Twins are probably going to go ham against the Suns. So if you're a fantasy basketball guy, pick those guys up during those weeks.
Yeah, but
what game are you excited to see?
You know, honestly, like I looked at the schedule so far, and my wife is pregnant with our second child right now, and she is due on October 30th, which is terrible timing on our part for covering the NBA. So I'm really looking forward to that Timberwolves Lakers matchup on the 28th, and then I don't know what the next game I'm going to get to see in person is, unfortunately. So I should be scouring the schedule
day
to figure out what I'm going to be able to. We're going to be able to watch at home. But I agree with you that, like, the return games, those, you know, like, they don't necessarily – they're not always revenge games, but, you know, things like when Hibbert comes back to Indiana is going to be kind of interesting to see, I think. It's always interesting to see how players react in those situations.
Right.
We don't have anything quite at the level of, you know, the first Cavs game or the first Cavs Heat game this year. But obviously those things are still – I mean, it's still going to be kind of – contentious.
Or Clippers Mavericks, so, you know, the first time the Clippers walk into Dallas. It seems like Dallas has a lot of drama going on this upcoming season.
That's true. Yeah, I would agree. The Clippers Mavs, that's gonna be pretty epic. Certainly that bad blood is not gonna be forgotten by that point. So that's one thing I'm definitely, yeah, you're right. The Mavs are gonna have a lot of people to boo, I guess, this season.
And hopefully they give it to them down there. I think both situations, you know, they're righteous and they're booing, which I'm a big fan of. But, yeah, no, I mean, the schedule's out. I think it's going to be an interesting year. And to me, we're not even done. I mean, obviously, I hate to jinx it, knocking on wood here, but we have to deal with them as injuries come up and all that good stuff that comes along with the NBA season. But let's jump over to a team that you know quite well. And that is the Minnesota Timberwolves. Interesting roster. Just added another veteran in Tayshaun Prince. I think that's a nice addition there. You know, another professional to keep these young guys in check. Let me ask you the money ball questions first for Timberwolves fans. And what is your expectation for this upcoming season in terms of wins, you know, potential playoff seeding if that's an option? What can fans expect for the Minnesota Timberwolves in your opinion?
I don't see playoff seeding being a thing that we should really be considering ourselves with, given how strong the Western Conference is and remains. I mean, I think there's going to be some shuffling. Obviously, Dallas looked like they were going to be doing all right with DeAndre, but that is obviously changing for them now to some extent. So, and the Trailblazers have also blown it up. So, you know, there's definitely going to be some movement in those top six teams or so, something like that. But I think that the Wolves would have to play way above their level to make it into the playoffs. And if they're doing that, I think they might have to do some things that might hamper their ultimate growth. I think they might, if they're trying to get into the playoffs, they're going to need to lean on veterans more for playing time than I think they should. If they're really trying to get the young guys to, you know, come together as a team. So in some ways it's like, I don't want them to really shoot for that. That said, I think they're going to do better than they did last season, which was 16 wins, I believe, you know, partially by virtue of the fact that I think they weren't tanking, but they certainly, I think at some point they decided that with the amount of injuries they had, they were going to focus on playing the young guys more and throwing guys like Zach LaVine out, you know, into the fire, basically, and handling the ball a lot. I think you're going to see, you know, LaVine move off the ball. They've got more options at point guard, and so they're going to be settling down a little bit. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him. I mean, I think it would be great if they could if they could double their win total, which I think is doable, given the fact it's not like they were playing as hard as they could last season to get – I mean, not to say that they weren't on the court playing as hard as they could, but, you know, that was an underachieving number. 16 was an underachieving number. So, I mean – they got a top 20 wins. It would be nice if you could see them top 30, maybe by a bit. But I think that would be a pretty good outcome for this season, as long as the development looks like it's on pace and doing well. Because they're going to be with the roster they've got, I think the ceiling is really high. So it'll be fun to see them, you know, 2-3 years from now.
Yeah, I was able to catch them down in Atlanta. I was down there for a couple games, and the talent was there. And I like to sit out and watch the young guys prepare before games. And had the pleasure of watching Zach and Andrew throw down some dunks and, you know, work with some mid-range shots and drives. And, you know, they're there. And, you know, those two guys alone, I believe, kept them in that game. But obviously just, you know, lack of talent and experience just comes hand-in-hand with that youthful age. But you're absolutely right. They got a lot of talent to look forward to. You know, and on the flip side of that, we got to talk about a little bit of bad news, which, you know, the press release came out that Flip Saunders is battling leukemia. He will continue to be involved in the roster and general managing, and I believe he's coaching as well. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yep. The release said that things are going to stay the same as far as we know for right now. So
you only hope he continues on, with getting better with his cancer, and hope to see him out there coaching, because I think he's a really good coach. You know, it's one of those, you know, they were like one of the most likable teams during that early Kevin Garnett run. You know, then they got Sam Cassell, and it was just one of those teams you rooted for, but, you know, can never do it. And I think Flip's an excellent coach, just, you know, had tough situations. Now, let's jump around the rest of the league, because he brought up something very interesting. And I'm actually, the more I listen to him talk, and maybe he's just convincing me when I listen to his interviews and such. But you mentioned the Portland Trailblazers and how they kind of blew it up. You know, Damian's still there, but they're starting from ground zero outside of that. But yet, I hear him talk, and he's, like, relishing in this me against the world or us against the world type attitude. He's excited for the young athletic roster that he has. It's going to be a different style of play. It's going to allow him to run up and down the court more. I'm not so sure they're going to miss the playoffs after listening to him speak. And I want to take your thoughts on that, in their transition period.
Well, the thing is, I mean, you know, again, I would give a lot of credit to a team saying that, you know, before it's absolutely clear that you need to blow it up, blowing it up, you know, in the sense that I think it's wrong to, you know, you look at some teams that, I mean, the Lakers might be kind of pulling it off, depending on how you think about Kobe and how long Kobe's going to be around and things like that. But it seems like they've been trying to milk the last couple years of Kobe rather than simply saying, like, okay, we need to start over. And it looks like, the Blazers, you know, they made the playoffs the last 2 years. So, like, they looked pretty good. But they hit this, they got rid of Batum, and this was, like, the first thing to key in the fact that they were going to lose Aldridge, and, you know, they lost Matthews and everything like that. And that team had just been together and been good for quite a long time. And I think that, if they're going to work on building something new, I think that's good. I think if they're picking Lillard to build it around, they picked the right guy, to build the team of the future around. But I just think that in the NBA, like, that chemistry and that experience of playing together is a huge part of what the Blazers really brought and what made them competitive and a playoff team. And I just think that's the kind of stuff that it's really hard to build over one season. I mean, you look at the Cavs last year and you look at how stacked that team was, and it still took them a long time to hit, you know, like a high gear, which they did sort of post All-Star break. And then, you know, they dealt with injuries. They didn't have the right guys to, you know, when it came down to the wire, I think just being successful in the playoffs at that point becomes a lot about how long the team's been together and that experience of playing together. And so I just think the teams that are kind of fresh are not going to have that resilience. But, you know, I'd love to be proven wrong. It's always fun to see young teams play well together and develop that kind of stuff on the fly. That would be a great story for the season.
Absolutely. I agree with you. So, having said that, because I was actually asked this question on a radio show, and it was very interesting. So, they asked me, obviously the top six teams are most likely going to make it again. Those bottom two spots are basically a toss-up. And you figure a team like New Orleans is going to be there. You get the Thunder there. You also got the two teams, Dallas and Portland, that a lot of people believe are on the fringe. But having said that, is there a surprise team in your mind that you feel is going to make the playoffs this year, or is there a surprise team that you feel might miss the playoffs?
You know, it's so tough with injuries to predict that kind of thing. I mean, look at the Thunder last year, right? I mean, they were one of those teams that it seems like they should have been, you know, in the playoffs for sure. And then, you know, the season actually happened and a lot of injuries happened to them. I mean, I agree. I think the Pelicans should probably make it. I was just listening to Zach Lowe's podcast with Amin Al-Hassan from ESPN, and Zach was picking Anthony Davis as MVP for next season. And if that's going to be the case, then the Pelicans are definitely going to be good if he's the MVP. You don't get the MVP as the eighth seed in the Western Conference. So, I mean, you could see – I'm looking down it right now. I mean, you know, the Jazz – I know that Dante Exum, you know, his injury is a problem, but I think that I'm with the people who say that it's a problem, but it's not a huge problem for them right now. Looking at their defense the second half of the season and how huge Gobert is, especially if they can just get into the playoffs, and then you suddenly get into that kind of situation where a big man protecting the rim and the game slows down a little bit can make a much bigger difference. They could make some noise in the playoffs. And I hate to call – I mean, I never want to doubt the Spurs, but they've had the most change in their roster that they've had in the last several years this year. It wouldn't be totally shocking to me if this is the moment when it turns the corner and, you know, Duncan looks his age and Aldridge doesn't fit in quite as well. You know, you got to keep thinking, you know, you never want to bet against the Spurs, but you keep thinking at some point something's got to go wrong for this team. So they could be the ones, they might be the surprise that doesn't actually come out of the West.
Yeah, and that's, I'm a big believer in the Jazz just because I really like Gordon Hayward. I think he's going to make that next leap if it's possible for Washington. He had a great season last year. I thought he should have been an all-star. But he you know, his improvement on defense to me was really telling. And, you know, you need a defensive wingman in this league. And, you know, we've seen teams go out of their way just to get a defensive specialist for the wing, you know, to help slow down the best players in the league, which happen to be, you know, your Durant, your LeBron. We don't need to say the list. But Gordon Hayward plays that position, and he plays it well on both ends of the floor. And you know, as you point out, you know, their young guys have just only improved. You know, I thought Alec Burks had a decent year, you know, prior to getting hurt. And, you know, the end of last season, two seasons ago, he, you know, really stepped up and was producing for them. It's just a nice core, but, you know, it's almost a toss-up. It's one of those things that you should just – I don't know if Vegas odds, but I feel like you should just put money on all those teams down there to win, you know, to pop up there or, you know, make the playoffs or, you know, any prop that you can make, because it really is a toss-up. And, you know, the thing that I wonder is, as you point out, is there a team like, you know, if James Harden goes down for the Rockets, you know, do they make the playoffs? And you don't want to do, you know, theories with those guys, but that's exactly what happened to the Thunder last year. So, you know, maybe this is the year that the Jazz sneak into the playoffs. And, you know, they were a fringe team last year. But going back to what we were talking about start the show, the Suns are also in a little, you know, situation here where they might not have their, you know, power forward, and that's just going to really throw everything off. They've had a lot of turnover as well. And there's actually a stat that P.J. Tucker is going to be the only player remaining, if Marquise Morris is moved, only player remaining since general manager Ryan McDonough came to Phoenix. But talk about a Danny Ainge protege if I've ever seen one.
Yeah. I guess it's crazy. I mean, I do think the Sun stuff is just insane because I really, you know, it really was just like 2 years ago that everybody was like, oh, Hornacek's a new coach, you know, they're not going to come together. And then everybody was like, they're so great. And then now they're just getting rid of everybody, which is insane.
It really just flips and, you know, twists and turns. And so let me ask you this, because you're a big West Coast guy, you know, you're out there covering the Timberwolves in town. But there's a whole other side to the basketball world out there, although not as interesting as the West. Are there any teams that made the playoffs last year that if you were a betting man, you would run out to Vegas saying they would not make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference?
So we're leaving my area of greater expertise and going to my area of lesser expertise here. I mean, it's so, you know, it's the Eastern Conference is so volatile, you know, like beyond sort of, you look at the Cavs and figure, you know, they're looking good. You know, probably no matter what. They've got LeBron James, so they're going to be okay. There are a lot of question marks about teams like, you know, the Hawks, who, in spite of looking so good last year, in the playoffs, you saw how they lacked somebody who could sort of, you know, when things started getting tough, you know, they had trouble with injuries to Korver and everything like that, but they didn't have, I mean, that was one of the things that I was concerned about during the season, that, you know, with everybody scoring, you know, double digits, but nobody's scoring more than 20 a game. And then in the playoffs, you really rely on people, you know, this sort of individual stars a lot of times stepping up. They just didn't really have that. And then now they've lost an important piece in Damari Carroll. So do they have that, I don't know, juju or whatever you want to say, that like made them so compelling and so good last year? Like, is that going to stick around? But I certainly wouldn't put money on them dropping out of the picture. I mean, again, you look at the bottom end of the, I mean, I think the Bucks are going to be better. A lot of people think the Celtics are going to be a lot better. The Nets maybe are the team that I would say, I mean, I was already sort of surprised that they made the playoffs. They're a team where it's like, you won 38 games, you made the playoffs, this is the Eastern Conference. So, you know.
It's a beautiful division if you're a rookie coach or a rookie general manager, I'll tell you that much. Or a conference, right?
Yeah.
It's a very beautiful conference over there. You know, you can have, you know, oh, he's made the playoffs his first 5 years, under 500 franchise. Okay. It's fun and interesting. But I did want to stop you for a second. You mentioned something about a team where I'm in the Boston area, and they are not happy with the offseason so far. I don't know what they were expecting. I think they were expecting a three-way trade that ended up with Durant and LeBron on the Celtics, but Boston fans are a little crazy. They're a little crazy. I like the offseason. I think they drastically improved the roster. I feel like they dedicated the roster to the coach's style, and I think they're only going to improve, because you look at that second half last year, they were the second-best team in the Eastern Conference in terms of wins, and they're going to carry that over with, you know, more agile big men. And, hey, we've seen the photos of Jared Sullinger. He's looking good out there, guys. You know, he's losing his weight, probably waiting for that next contract, but What's your first take on the offseason that the Celtics had this year? Because obviously they got some boo birds at the draft, some yay birds later on in the first round draft. But overall, I feel like the fan base is very disappointed.
Yeah, I grew up in Massachusetts. I grew up like the other end of the state, so away from Boston. But I grew up a Red Sox fan. Oh, what was that?
I said, oh, the Hall of Fame, Springfield area. What's the?
Little even farther west than that, Williamstown. It's like the northwest corner of the state. But I also lived in Northampton, which was pretty close to Springfield. So at one point, I have experience with the Boston fan base. I know of what you speak. So, I mean, I think that, you know, obviously around the draft there was a lot of drama about, you know, how much it was worth getting into the playoffs, given that, you know, they slid down, you know, further than they would have been if they had not made the playoffs and not played well there. So it's, you know, I understand that conflicted feeling, but I do think that, again, with a coach like Brad Stevens, who, you know, everybody believes in, and he really seems to know what he's doing, and he seems like a great coach. And, you know, with a roster that has good pieces, if maybe not great pieces yet, I still think that, again, in the Eastern Conference, like, they got a puncher's chance to do pretty well this season. So I can understand the trepidation, because they didn't land any big, you know, they didn't get Durant and LeBron. But, you know, who's going to get that? So I think that patience is should be the order of the day, and the understanding that I think Brad Stevens knows what he's doing.
Right, and I don't think I've seen a rookie coach come in the league on fire as Brad Stevens, and not even on fire in terms of producing in the win-loss column, because his first year was terrible. You know, I believe he was under 30 wins. I don't have the number on top of my head, but I believe he was under 30 wins, and, you know, second season, drastic improvement going in third year. But he's earned the respect from guys around the league who he's never coached. You know, we've heard LeBron praise him throughout, you know, obviously the playoffs, and, you know, credit him in preparing his team. But even throughout the regular season, you heard, you know, comments from stars around the league just praising a guy like Brad Stevens. And I know he's, you know, been overseas coaching with, you know, other coaches with other stars, and you know how coaches love to recruit. So I think that's a big selling tool to some people. They can convince them of the system. But I also really like the contract that he was able to get this year. You know, he didn't overpay for anybody. you know, and if he did overpay for somebody, it's short on years. And he just has so many movable pieces, and you're absolutely right. The key is patience. You know, you're not landing a superstar unless you draft him top tier or if he falls, you found a hidden gem, which both of those things are very rare and very hard to do. Or I think the best way that you can get one is trade. And they've done it before, and, you know, a lot of teams have done it that way. And to me, that's just, you know, and people hate this because they don't, you have the, my good friend Snotty Drippin's method is tank and just gamble for that lottery pick, that first overall pick, which you can mess up. I like to, you know, continuously improve your assets. And it, going back to what we talked about, think of it as a business in a sense. And I think that's the better way to build a team opposed to what the 76ers are doing. But having said that, do you have any expectations for the defending champs in terms of, you know, do you see them being able to get a repeat here, or is it going to be one of those where, you know, they're just not ready for back-to-back type stuff? And didn't mean to reference straight there, but they're just not ready for that yet, you know, the miles it takes, especially with Curry on the USA roster, you know, knowing how hard it is to go back-to-back to the NBA Finals and play that many games in that many minutes.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's obviously tough. I think that just going to the Finals back-to-back is harder than a lot of people realize. You know, when you look at LeBron and how many Finals he's been in a row, even including ones where they didn't win, I think that takes a tremendous toll. It's, you know, you're talking about like 100 games as opposed to 82 games. It's like a whole other quarter of a season essentially tacked on if you're going to go that far. And the Warriors were tremendously fortunate last year in terms of health, in a year in which pretty much every other team that was in the playoffs was missing key players down the stretch. The Warriors really didn't have so much of that problem. So, again, like any team is only one serious injury away from a really rocky road. But, you know, the Warriors, the thing about them is that they really are built to do this, you know, for several years. You know, they're not a team where they have – some guy who they dumped a bunch of money into to try to make a run right now. You know, you've got, obviously they had to, you know, re-up some, you know, there's this whole thing that people say about how Steph Curry is like the sixth highest paid player now on the team, but that's good for them because, you know, Curry is only making, I think, $12 million at the end of, like, not even this season, like next season. You know, Bogut's making something like the same thing. They're probably going to, I mean, eventually they're going to move away from Bogut probably for age and injury concerns, but, you know, they got Draymond Green, and I think that he's important very specifically for that team. You know, I think a couple of people made cases for the idea of a situational max for a player like that, where is he a max player on any team? Not necessarily, but what he does for the Warriors is so important that it's worth paying him for that, especially given that last year he made less than $1 million, I think. I think he was under $1 million for the year. It's just insane. So they really are set up to be, you know, they lost David Lee, but again, I don't think David Lee was, you know, I think David Lee was a good teammate and, you know, took the fact that he was coming off the bench and everything fine, but it's not like he was essential to their success for that, for those reasons. So, I mean, I still feel like the Warriors have got to be your favorites, you know, followed closely probably by the Cleveland Cavaliers, but I certainly wouldn't bet against them making the Finals again.
Yeah, it's definitely tough out there. Not everybody's LeBron, and I feel like he's going to be that player that we're going to regret not appreciating when he was around. Well, let's jump to two bad news stories here. I got to balance that. We got a little too happy there. The first story is, you know, for you TMZ followers out there, I guess Lamar Odom flipped out on a cameraman, you know, yelling about discrediting him, taking his character down. They took everything away from him and ruined his life, and he's not going to let him do it again. Well, Lamar, they did it again, so I don't know if he won that battle. And then the other news is just, these stories come out every once in a blue moon, in all sports, really, and it's kind of a sad story. And it's the Mike Scott story here, where he is now facing up to 25 years in jail if they max out both charges, which, if you didn't know, he was recently pulled over with, you know, was it 35 grams of marijuana, 11 grams of Molly, and in the state that he was pulled over in, which I believe is Atlanta, Georgia, it's 10 years for the marijuana and 15 for the Molly. So I don't think he's going to get that much. You know, being a professional athlete, you get out of some of these situations a little later than the average folks, but definitely not good. And why? Like, don't people learn their lessons? We've done this over and over again. You know, you had football with Aaron Hernandez. You've had guys throughout. Like, how? I understand the same aspect where you don't want to just leave your buddies, but how are you still, with all the knowledge you have of this kind of stuff, how are you still, or being in Georgia, go to a state that's friendly, go to Colorado. Why would you continue to do this? Why would you continue to behave like this?
I think that, I mean, I think one of the things that's very, that's tough is the amount of scrutiny, obviously, that guys like this, that guys like this are under. I think that, you know, a lot of people can make a mistake like that, and then, you know, in some situations, obviously, it can cost them a lot. In other situations, they make that mistake, but they don't get caught, and nothing ever happens. And you're also talking about that even for players who aren't making a ton of money, you're talking about a lot of money for these guys and a lot of opportunities and a lot of people who are their friends or, you know, maybe should be better friends than they're being, but are not necessarily the best people to be hanging out with, combined with the fact that you're going to be super scrutinized for anything you do. That's a very, you know, potent combination of high-stakes things that can go wrong. So in some ways, I almost feel like, I mean, it's amazing that this doesn't happen even more than it does, and I think that a lot. I mean, I feel like it's better than maybe it used to be, in the sense of guys doing it less. I think maybe there was less attention paid to it. I mean, you hear stories about, you know, the 70s right. And even the 80s and like the stuff that was going on that was just, you know, we didn't talk about it because there wasn't TMZ. I think there was probably a point at which it was really bad, and now it's maybe gotten a little better. But you're always going to have some people who run afoul of in these situations, and it's too bad. And I, you know, Mike Scott seems like a nice guy, and as much as I can,
right.
You know, it's so hard to assess that, but he seems like a decent, genuine dude. But he was definitely a bad situation.
Yeah, it's just one of those wrong places, wrong company. You know, it's just one of those situations where, you know, you're not going to kick your boys who were there for you growing up or whatever have you. You know, I don't know the details of the situation, but it seems to be a common theme there. Yeah, it's just one of those things where I don't get it, but at the same time, if you do, you can't just forget your boys. But I always like to end this podcast with a crazy stat, meaning I just made up that segment, and this kind of came across Twitter today. I believe someone posted it from Reddit, and it's actually a stat that would shut my argument up. I thought James Harden probably should have been the MVP, but I loved Russell Westbrook's surgeons last year. I mean, that was great basketball to watch. You know, it's just guy on a whole nother level. But Steph Curry would have been more efficient by total shooting percentage than Russell Westbrook if you took all his three-point shots and made them two-point shots, which that to me is insane considering the amount of threes he took, or made rather, was 286.
Right.
It just shows you where the world of analytics is going. And, you know, the analytics is the good side of, you know, new technology and social media. And the bad side is what forces guys like Justin Bieber to have his party goers remove their cell phones and sign a waiver. the pros and cons here. That's the life it is. I was downstairs with a bunch of friends down here at the Cape during my vacation, and we were just chatting up rock star life. And, you know, you hear these stories about, you know, Steven Tyler, you know, for 20 years he was a sex addict, and, you know, God knows what he was up to. But no one can do that these days just because of all the things that are out there. You know, you really don't have that privacy unless you own a big mansion and you confiscate everybody's cell phones and make them sign waivers.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, the thing with the analytics in terms of basketball, like just the on-court stuff is, you know, it's, there's so much good stuff there and so much interesting work to be done with it. But I definitely get that fatigue of sort of needing everything a player does to be sort of endlessly taken apart, and you know, that everything has to mean something. And I can not empathize because I'm terrible at basketball, but I can sympathize, you know, with these players where, do you want to know every, I mean, some players do. Shane Battier wants to know this, but like, does every player want to know exactly which spot on the floor they should be taking every shot from? You know, like that just, I think as somebody who's just played the game for so long, coached, but also in some ways on a sort of primal instinctual level, that could just mess with you so much. And that kind of level of scrutiny for analytics, I think I can see the point of view which says that you got to make sure that it's not just data, but that you're using the data to create, you know, a compelling, you know, sort of structure for players to understand how to be effective in. And so I can totally, you know, I think that the micro scrutiny of everything, you know, socially, but also, you know, just in terms of on the court analytics, it can feel a little oppressive sometimes.
Right, right. And the worst part is it's really tough to debate when you have the classic debate, which, you know, a lot of us here have, is the eye versus the statistics. And, you know, you can say this is just what I see, and then people, you know, brush you off, but, you know, they sit there and stare at the analytics. And, you know, the good thing about analytics is it proves how valuable a guy like Shane Battier was. But the bad side of analytics, you know, you got to tell me a 28-point score for a game is not efficient. Well, yeah, he's scoring 28 points for a game, and his team is one of the top teams in the playoffs every year. You know, I don't care what your statistics says, if he's efficient or not efficient. He's clearly winning me games and giving the team the best chance for a victory.
Yeah.
Steve, I got to ask you, do you have anything you want us to plug while you got the time? You're right for too many people. I didn't know who to say. I didn't know, you know, the order. I probably should have announced all the places you write, and I didn't want to leave anything off. And I also didn't want to spend the entire podcast naming all the places you write for.
Sure, sure. No, I can understand that. I mean, I think mostly right now I'm A Wolf Among Wolves, which is the Timberwolves blog, which is sort of gives me my raison d'etre during the season. But then other general NBA stuff, mostly Rolling Stone and I think Vice Sports right now. I've been doing some stuff for them, and they're a lot of fun to work with. So, but you know, as things come up, I'm just like, this feels like it should maybe go here or go here. So, you know, it's all things are possible. So I don't have anything specific to pitch, but I'm there on the internet. Just find me on Twitter. That's where all my stuff is. So.
You're pretty easy guy to find. I love the Twitter handle, Steve Adventurous. I tweeted it 100 times, so just look for it there. I got to say, congratulations on the newborn along the way, and I hope that you get your league pass queued up for those late nights where you're rocking the baby to sleep and the laptop on view.
Absolutely, I will, man.
All right, thanks so much, Steve. This has been the Pull-Up Podcast.
Thanks.
Welcome to the Pull-Up Podcast, brought to you by HoopsCritic.com.